Welcome to the show. Hi, everyone. I'm Bobby Elias with co-host Evelina Molina. Hi, Evelina. How are you?
Hi, Bobby. Excited to be here today on this wonderful day. Happy Valentine's Day. Much love to you down in the South.
Much love to everyone, especially women. It's Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's to everyone. And the show today, Evelina's going to do most of it. And Let's Create a Better World is all about creating a better world with not only the problems of the world, but better yet, if possible, the solutions. Sometimes it's hard to come up with a good solution because there are so many problems in the world today. But women's rights is something that one of my favorite subjects. We talk about it a lot on this show, as well as many other things, as we all know. And Evelina, you can go ahead and proceed and introduce our guest, and then I may come in with a question or two, but it's mostly your show today. Go right ahead.
Thank you very much, Bobby. Before I introduce my guest, I do want to give a little bit of background on the theme of our show. We are going to be talking about 1 Billion Rising, which it was the biggest mass action in human history. Founded by Eve Ensler, who's a Tony Award-winning playwright, a performer, and an activist. She's the author of The Vagina Monologues that was translated in over 48 languages, performed in over 140 countries. What I'm very connected to and very excited about is she's also the founder of V-Day, the global activist movement and violence against women and girls, which has raised over $120 million to end violence. And 1 Billion Rising, which we'll be talking about today, is a global mass action campaign that happens in over 200 countries on Valentine's Day. Today, we are so lucky to have 1 Billion Rising Global Coordinator, Lindsay Horvath. She has held a variety of leadership positions while serving in the West Hollywood City Council. She focused on age-friendly community issues. She created the first ever West Hollywood Community Response Team to domestic violence. She collaborated with community leaders and organizations to successfully advocate for the full funding of the backlog of untested rape kit evidence. She serves as the chair of the Transportation Commission of West Hollywood, also very active in the Women's Reproductive Rights Alliance Project, Women Against Gun Violence, Services and Advocacy for GLBT Elders, and the YWCA. She graduated cum laude from the University of Notre Dame with a Bachelor of Arts degree in Political Science and Gender Studies. And in 2013, she was the finalist for the Los Angeles Business Journal's Women Making the Difference Volunteer of the Year Award. Lindsay, that is just a very small part of your accomplishments. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be part of this conversation and grateful that you want to help raise awareness about 1 Billion Rising and what we're up to.
Before we get into the theme and talk about the history of 1 Billion Rising, Lindsay, my question for you is, what are you on? And whatever you're on, I want I want some. I'm looking at your work and what you've done. Congratulations, being an inspiration. Can you give our listeners a little insight to your journey? When did you know? How did you find out? Have you always known that you were going to be an activist and have this talent to balance city leadership and activism, which sometimes it doesn't feel like those two worlds could really mesh? Tell us something about your journey.
Really appreciate that. Thank you. I don't sleep very much, but I'm lucky. I make it through anyway. You know, I grew up in a small town on the east side of Cleveland, Ohio, and I grew up in a community where people gave back and took care of one another, and I grew up in a Catholic community, and I like to think I got the good parts of the Catholic Church, meaning a commitment to social justice. And so I just always believed that all of the opportunities that were afforded to me, you know, whether it was a great education, a good family, a great community, you know, that it was my responsibility to also give back and help to create those things for other people. And, you know, I guess growing up, I never really thought about the possibility that girls and boys were supposed to do different things. So, you know, while I was growing up, I was at the top of my class in grade school and, you know, just wanted to be involved in as many things as I possibly could. I thought that's what you're supposed to do. You know, I really enjoyed it. And as I grew up, I started to see how, you know, boys and girls were treated a little bit differently. Eventually, my family moved to Las Vegas. I finished high school there. It was a bit of a culture shock to move there. But I think it helped me really learn what about my community and growing up in the Midwest really stuck with me was really, again, being of service to my community. And so when I went to the University of Notre Dame, I learned of this thing called gender studies. That was ended up being my second major. And I started to understand that looking at the world through a gendered lens, you saw the ways that a whole range of gender minorities were treated differently and what those differences looked like. And so, as you mentioned, I got involved with the Vagina Monologues while I was in college. One of my closest friends wanted to audition. She asked me if I would go with her, and I said, yes, absolutely. So I went with her to the audition and very quickly realized that this was something I wanted to be involved in organizing, and it was very exciting, but little did I know the kind of controversy I was about to embark on doing the Vagina Monologues on a college campus that was a Catholic university. And so it really opened up.
Wow.
It really opened up my eyes to seeing that, you know, despite thinking about the Catholic Church as an institution committed to social justice, I got a lot of pushback about, you know, protecting women from violence, and I just didn't understand that. You know, I learned that being at a Catholic university, they didn't want to talk about sex, let alone sexual assault. And unfortunately,
I'm sure the big V word, vagina, was pretty radical. Just the word.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we had a campus-wide demonstrations. We had a whole week of action on campus, and it was pretty exciting and eye-opening and educational for people on campus, but I also learned a lot. It's actually statistically right now, young women are likelier to be raped in their lifetime if they go to college than if they don't. And that is part of the reason why I continue this work. That's just unacceptable. Through my college experience, through my activism there, and through getting involved in that community, I realized just how at risk women were of different forms of violence, and how even when the issue was raised in community conversation, you know, people often looked the other way, didn't want to talk about it, or didn't know how to address it. And so for me, I couldn't just look the other way when I saw that women, a community I'm a part of, were experiencing tremendous violence and discrimination. It was just something that I knew I needed to be a part of ending.
That was the voice of 1 Billion Rising Global Coordinator Lindsay Horvath. We're talking about V-Day and Valentine's Day in an activist perspective. I'm going to just go back a little bit of the history. The campaign was launched for the first time on Valentine's Day in 2012. I was out doing the dance out there in front of our mall, our local mall in Santa Rosa. So it was just so empowering. We had about 300 women, which was like a really big deal in little Santa Rosa, Mayberry, USA. But it began a call to action for us. And the call was for people to realize that 1 in 3 women on the planet will be beaten or raped during her lifetime. And with the world's population at 7 billion, that means that more than 1 billion women and girls will be affected this way. And it's very obvious from listening to you that Eve Ensler's work had a major effect on you. We've all had people that have affected us, but are there some other role models and people along your path that just really set your course and direction? And I also like to know about how did you get into politics?
Sure. Gosh, there are so many inspiring people that I've had the opportunity to meet throughout my lifetime. And I would say that we can look to people who are sort of out there, you know, big name people that get a lot of the spotlight, but oftentimes people who really change our lives are the ones who are right next to us every day. And say growing up in a small town in the Midwest, I had heard the name Gloria Allred said at some point. I don't remember exactly when, but growing up, I thought I wanted to be an attorney and I wanted to be like her. And now living in the Los Angeles area, as you know, I live in West Hollywood, I've actually become friends with Ms. Allred and gotten to be part of her work. And, you know, it's kind of surreal how life can come full circle like that sometimes. You know, I've had the opportunity to be mentored by women like Gloria Steinem, as you mentioned, Eve Ensler, but also women like Zoe Nicholson, who actually fasted for over 30 days to pass the Equal Rights Amendment. And actually, the Equal Rights Amendment was a constitutional amendment in the United States that passed Congress but never received the ratification of enough states to actually become a constitutional amendment. And what it would have done would be to protect women from gender-based discrimination. And she fasted for the ERA. And it's interesting because the day that the ERA actually failed ratification, it's the only amendment in history that was given a deadline. The deadline for the Equal Rights Amendment was June 30th, 1982, and that happens to be the day that I was born. So it's very interesting how I feel like, you know, I was sort of born quite literally into this movement that fighting for women's rights, fighting to keep women safe is just sort of a movement that I was, like I said, born into. It's always been part of who I am, even before I think I actively knew it. And I saw the law and government as a way to help people who couldn't help themselves. I know that's quite an optimistic view of government. I know it's easy to be cynical sometimes when you see the kinds of ways that a lot of our political leaders are using the government to not help those who are most in need. But I try to keep an optimistic view, and it is my intention, you know, with every service opportunity I have had, to make sure that the people who are most marginalized are put at the center of governmental work. And I truly believe that when we take care of the people who are often forgotten about or left behind, when they are at the center of the work, everyone will be taken care of. And that's really sort of my vision for the kind of leadership that I offer. You know, political work has been, you know, just one way to get involved. And just as you said, I've worked on the outside and sort of been, you know, the rabble-rouser on the outside demanding change. And then I've had the opportunity to be on the inside and working in governmental office. And I think my ability to navigate bureaucracy is part of the reason why I've pursued politics. But we need voices on all sides of the conversation. And having strong activist voices is just as important as having key lawmakers and decision makers who are willing to be part of that change.
Out here in Northern California myself, I've been working in the area of human rights for our communities that migrate due to economics and climate change. And I have yet to find that balance, but I'm really inspired by people like you that have figured out how to navigate. So last year, on February 14th, 1 Billion Rising for Justice focused on the issue of justice for all survivors of gender violence. It highlighted the impunity that lives in the intersection of poverty, of racism, of war, the plunder of the environment, capitalism, imperialism, and patriarchy. There were events in over 200 countries where women, men, and youth came together. Let's talk about what's in the game plan for this year, and what are some of the things you do as a 1 Billion Rising global coordinator?
Sure. Just as you said, it's been a movement that's been growing over the past few years. And when 1 Billion Rising started, it was born out of the very idea you described, that one in three women in her lifetime will be raped or beaten. And that actually amounts to over a billion people on the planet. You know, I think sometimes when we think about violence against women and girls, we think of it as, you know, sort of this side issue or special interest issue. But the reality is it's a public safety issue, it's a national security issue, and it's a human rights issue. And so what we intended to do with the movement the first year when it was launched was really move the conversation from the margins to the mainstream and make sure that we're not on the 13th page of the newspaper, you know, we're on page one. And I think for good or for bad, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, we do now see almost every day new stories of violence against women and girls in the media. We do see, you know, these human atrocities being exposed, and that's the first step. We really need to educate people. And then as you indicated last year, our theme was justice and focusing on what justice looks like. And that helped us build our coalition, a much broader coalition, you know, of folks working in prison reform and justice reform and environmental justice and economic justice. And really looking at what some of the root causes of violence are against women and girls. And so, you know, we've thought about, you know, what are some laws that need to be on the books? What are some of the reforms that need to happen? But this year, our theme is revolution. And so, you know, it's kind of no holds barred. What does a world look like when violence against women and girls is over? What will that be like? How will it be different for women and girls? What will our justice systems offer? You know, what will media look like? What will our educational system look like? Will we have pay equity? All different kinds of conversations. And so a revolution around the world will look very different because each community has very different needs. And so my role as a global coordinator based here in Southern California is to work with communities in the area and, you know, pretty much any communities that reach out to me in the United States to help identify the issues in their community that need to be addressed and then help inspire activists on the ground to take action in ways that make most sense for their community. And so while I'm helping to coordinate events here in Southern California, I've also been in touch with, you know, a veterans group in Washington, D.C. that's mobilizing an action on Capitol Hill on the 14th about sexual violence that happens to women in the military. I'm working with a Jewish women's group in New Jersey to help mobilize a grassroots action there. And so different countries have different global coordinators to help really bring actions together, but you don't need a global coordinator to do an action, and no action is too small because it's really about raising awareness and helping to engage people in the conversation.
So I just wanted to let our listeners know, too, that Let's Create a Better World is what they're listening to. I'm Bobby Elias, the host, and Evelina Molina, our co-host, is doing a great job. She put a great show together, and don't go away, listeners, because we've got more excitement coming in on the rest of the show. We're celebrating women, we're celebrating Valentine's Day, but we're letting you know that there's so much discrimination against women. It's one of our favorite subjects. I was brought up in the women's movement around in the 70s. I saw and was near Gloria Steinem doing all her great work. And there are men, I'm sure both of you are aware, men that do support this, and I'm one of them. And I've supported many, many different causes. And I just want to thank both of you for this. Go ahead and proceed, Evelina.
So, Lindsay, do you have any actions that are happening in your community, West Hollywood or Los Angeles, that you can talk about? And also, I'm very, very curious about women against gun violence. And the reason that I'm honing in on that is that we've had a tragedy here in my community, actually in my neighborhood. A young 13-year-old child, Andy Lopez, was brutally gunned down by Deputy Delhouse from the Sheriff's Department. He unloaded a weapon in 10 seconds. He unloaded 9 bullets and 7 of those bullets into our child's body. So obviously it's been a year and we have been very traumatized by this kind of gun violence and the militarization of our local police force. And last year for our 1 billion rising, we danced in a spiral dance with sacred ceremony and our indigenous Aztec dancers with the mother and the father of the child who had been brutally murdered by the Sheriff's Department. Talk to us about your Women Against Gun Violence.
So first of all, I am so sorry to hear about the tragedy in your community. Unfortunately, I think that story, while I'm sure it's quite painful for your community and moving through what the impacts of that violence beyond that very moment, I think there are other communities that can relate to that. And that's part of the reason why 1 Billion Rising resonates with so many different communities is we do deal with violence in our communities in so many different ways. And I think, like your community, mine and others around the world want to see that violence stop. So here in Los Angeles, we've organized all kinds of different events over the past few years. We have organized ecumenical services at a local church with different faith leaders to talk about how faith communities can come together and provide spiritual healing and support for those who are suffering from the violence that's happened in our communities. We have had rallies that bring together different community organizations, political leaders, and even celebrities like Jane Fonda, Anne Hathaway, Dylan McDermott, Sufi Bradshaw, so many others, to speak out and speak up about the issues facing women and girls, whether it's sexual violence, domestic violence, economic abuse, environmental injustice, so many different issues. We've done actions outside the Women's Correctional Facility in Linwood, talking about the different issues that women in prison face. Statistically, women who are imprisoned have experienced violence in their lifetime before they committed crimes. And often the crimes that they did commit were in response to violence that they were experiencing in their lifetime. And then they go to a justice system that often also perpetrates violence on them once they're in the correctional system. So, you know, there are a lot of different issues around justice reform and what true justice looks like. We've mobilized dance actions and flash mobs and all of the different events that we put together. There are so many more that are listed on our main website, which is 1billionrising.org. And you can actually go on there, click on find an event, type in your zip code, and find something that's going on near you. And if it's not going on near you, go ahead and list an event, because there will be people in your community who will show up and who will want to speak out. I think organizations like Women Against Gun Violence participate in this conversation for exactly the reasons you articulated, that all too often issues of violence affect people in so many different ways. And, you know, I was able to serve in leadership with that organization for a period of time. And, you know, our work in educating the community about the senseless gun violence that happens, about what laws are and are not on the books to protect us from senseless gun violence. We brought forward advocacy efforts to increase gun control measures, to increase background checks, make sure that guns are not getting into the hands of unsafe people. But just as you said, sometimes the people that we do entrust with our safety are sometimes the perpetrators of violence. And so, you know, how do we make sure that doesn't happen in our communities? What steps and actions can we take to make sure that those who are charged with keeping us safe actually do that? And how do we take responsibility for our own communities and reclaim our communities to end the violence that's happening there? So that's a lot of what Women Against Gun Violence does. And in fact, when there are, unfortunately, incidents of gun violence in the community, members of the organization go out and demonstrate and provide community and support for people. You know, they respond to the incident and they do vigils often in communities where people are victims of gun violence. So there's a wide variety of actions that the organization takes, and I encourage you to go to the website and check out the different ways that the organization works. Because I know while we're based here in Los Angeles, Women Against Gun Violence has been able to do actions throughout the country.
And that's Lindsay Horvath. She is the global coordinator for 1 Billion Rising, also has myriad of accolades. And Lindsay, we have actually the mother of the child, Andy Lopez, had to relocate to Los Angeles because she was unable to basically live here at peace. And it's just very painful. But I'm definitely going to mention and see if I could plug her in over there to something that she can, you know, get involved in to help deal with her healing process. I'd like to talk now about your work with the West Hollywood City Council. What has it been like?
So I served on the City Council for 2 years. I was there from 2009 to 2011. It was sort of an interesting and special circumstance where, unfortunately, one of our council members passed away while in office. And so for the remainder of his term, the existing council members decided to go through an appointment rather than a special election to have somebody carry out the remainder of his term. And so about 37 people in the community applied for the appointment. I was encouraged by many people in my community. And in fact, at the time, I was chair of the Women's Advisory Board in the city. I applied thinking, you know, at the time I was 25 and, you know, I thought I would do it to get more involved in the community and see if I could, you know, meet some people, you know, make some good connections and let people know I wanted to be of service. So on a Monday night, the council decided they wanted to go through an appointment. By Friday, we had to turn in our applications. And by the following Wednesday, all 37 candidates were invited to give two-minute speeches. And then in a process that I affectionately refer to as the American Idol of politics, the council then went through deciding who from that list of, I think about 37 people, would become the council member for the remainder of that term. And so I was unanimously chosen to serve in that capacity. And while I was on the council, I was able to do some of the things that you mentioned. It's hard to get a lot done in 2 years, but I tried to make the most of the opportunity. And I think it was really important to have a voice on the council who really wanted to take up the issues of domestic violence, addressing the backlog of untested rape kit evidence in the county, you know, things that I think sometimes we think, oh, there are laws on the books to address that. That's something that the system already takes care of. But when you really go back and revisit it, the issue of accountability is really important. And so I think a lot of times when you talk about when is violence against women going to be over, it's when we decide to hold ourselves accountable to the laws that we have on the books and the standards in society we say we want to live up to. We have to hold ourselves accountable to them. And so that's going to be when violence against women and girls is over. And so in my capacity as a city council member, I really wanted us to hold ourselves accountable to the ways our community contributed to violence and change that.
So you actually got to be a part of the city council without having to really invest the large amounts of money that a political election campaign takes.
Initially, yes, I was appointed and I didn't have to run. I did run to retain my seat. I did not win that election in 2011, but I am running now to get back on the council. And unfortunately, you are right. Campaigns are very expensive and campaign finance reform is tremendously needed and long overdue. But, you know, I want to say to you, though, that oftentimes women don't think about running for office. It's not something that's top of mind. Statistics show that women need to be asked to run for office. So for anyone who's listening today, I just want to say, consider yourselves asked. We need more women in leadership. We need more women in elected office. And I want every woman to consider the possibility of running because we do need more women in elected leadership.
And Lindsay, to finish off on this interview today, I know you had a lot of lessons learned and you probably had a lot of epiphanies during your 2 year in city council. But could you share with our audience, what are the best things that you learned that you were really surprised, and what were your greatest challenges?
Well, I think one issue in particular was the fact that I was appointed was a bit of a challenge. There were some people who didn't know me very well, and so during that 2 year period, it was hard to gain people's trust and be able to work with them, you know, for people who didn't know me very well. And I think for people who obviously value a democratic process, you know, there were some people who were upset that their voices weren't able to be heard in the form of a special election. So that was sort of a unique challenge to my situation. And while I didn't appoint myself, it was a challenge that I faced while in office. But I think government is designed to move slowly to make sure that everybody has a say in the process and that a process properly vets a decision before it's made. But that said, sometimes there are decisions that need to be made very quickly. And so I think it's hard sometimes to recognize that governmental process can slow down the reforms and the kinds of changes that are needed in society right away. And so one thing that I learned is that being able to navigate a bureaucracy and find the fastest way to getting an outcome that is necessary for a community, that is the most essential day-to-day responsibility of someone in elected leadership, is to understand the system and be able to get to answers right away. Not to circumvent a process, not to leave voices out, but to make sure that the most efficient and effective process is in place to make decisions for a community. Those were some of the kinds of lessons that I learned on the job. I learned, of course, specifics about my community and the things that people were really focused on and concerned about in the community while I was there. But I think it was also a great opportunity to help educate people about what local government does. It was interesting because I created a mentorship program where anyone in the community could apply to work in my office for 30 days. And I called it a mentorship program. So a lot of young people applied, which I was very excited about, but it was really for anyone. And in fact, because when I was appointed, I had some women in their 50s and 60s whom I knew through political groups saying, well, what does a council member actually do? And I realized that there wasn't even transparency around what the responsibilities were of a council member. So I wanted to open up the office And for 30 days, someone could come in, meet all the different directors of different departments and understand what different issues were addressed at City Hall. That happened for 2 weeks. And then the second 2 weeks of the 30 days, they would focus on a particular issue of interest. They would help write resolutions, different items that would come to a council agenda. They would sit up on the dais with me and preside over a council meeting. And I really wanted people to have the feeling of what it was like to be a council member and to learn what a city council did, because I think a lot of times we see people don't participate in their local government. They might vote for president or something like that, but they don't pay attention to, you know, who their city council member is or who their school board member is. And often those roles are the things that impact us most day to day. So I really want to encourage more people to get involved and be engaged and open up the process and make it more transparent and accessible. So that was the exciting opportunity. That's more of what I want to do on the council. And I think that's what happens when you have women in leadership. We really want to open up conversations and bring more people to the table.
Do you find that being part of the leadership of a place like West Hollywood has unique challenges because of the whole Hollywood brand? Do you have to deal with...
Oh, absolutely.
Dealing with, exactly.
And it's true. I mean, you know, dealing with paparazzi, you know, who want to follow celebrities, you know, that can create public safety issues. Dealing with the impacts of traffic and parking in places where people, you know, want to come and shop and experience nightlife and go out where the celebrities go out and, you know, have sort of that Hollywood experience. You know, there are all kinds of impacts that come to a neighborhood like ours. And so there are some practical implications from those things. Of course, it's great to be the creative city. It's great to be in the heart of the community and of a region that really exports culture that the entire world consumes. So I feel like we're really at the heart of a lot of culture creation. But, you know, in the practical day-to-day, you have to also think about if we have tourists coming, where are they going to stay? Do we have enough hotel space? If they drive here, where are they going to park? How are they going to know how to get around? And how are they appreciating, you know, some of the historic destinations that have been part of the Hollywood culture over time? You know, how do we make sure that they know places where some of the celebrities lived or where they went out to party, you know, on the Sunset Strip? So it's actually a really fun place to be in leadership. You know, it does come with its own unique set of challenges as well.
In our community, we just got legislation passed to be able to have 5 hens in our backyard, like 5 chickens, but we still can't get a rooster.
Well, I don't know that we've had that problem in West Hollywood, although I do know.
Yeah, but let me tell you, you want to talk about an uphill battle, try to get a rooster. that's the Northern California politic world for you.
I'll let you know if we have that issue in West Hollywood.
Well, Lindsay, it's been such a pleasure having you on Let's Create a Better World. I want to thank you for doing just that, creating a better world today, and for being an inspiration to me. I have a really great relationship with Julie Combs, who is our city council, a feminist and equal politician, because she's always advocating for a greener, more sustainable world. And so I, for the first time in my experience, to feel a little bit more connected, because truly I was one of those people like, well, what do city council people do? You're right. I think most of us don't know. And then as a woman of color, I think we tend to be removed even more from the process, because sometimes there's language barriers for Latinas or just the fear of our community to go into bureaucratic spaces. So thank you so much for your work. To finish off, will you be participating in an activity for 1 Billion Rising on Valentine's Day? And also, if people want to learn more about you, your campaign, and 1 Billion Rising, where can they find out more?
Sure. So there will be all kinds of actions taking place because February 14th falls on the Saturday of President's Day weekend. We're actually doing a whole weekend of action. And so we have events happening Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So it's really exciting. But yes, we have a kickoff in West Hollywood on Friday the 13th that morning. It will be a community action. We have action at Linwood Correctional Facility at noon on Saturday. And we have an event at Los Angeles City Hall at 3 p.m. on Saturday the 14th as well. So there are lots of actions. If you want to find out more about the events that are taking place, you can go to 1billionrising.org. Like I said, type in your zip code and you can find out about events happening around you. If you'd like to learn more about my campaign, you can go to LindsayHorvath4WeHo.com. And my personal website is just my name, LindsayHorvath.com. But if you want to reach me directly, you can email me at Lindsay@1BillionRising.org. And I'd love to hear from people. And if there's any way that I can be of help in raising awareness about violence against women and girls and helping to stop it, please count on me and please reach out.
Lindsay, would you mind spelling out your website name, just because Lindsay sometimes can be spelled in multiple
ways? Sure. Yeah, it's LindsayHorvath.com.
Well, Lindsay, again, thank you so much. I wish you all the best in the world. Good luck with your campaign, and thank you for all the work you're doing and for being such an inspiration to women like myself that are just trying to figure it out and doing our part. Thank you.
And thank you for what you're doing. It takes courage. It takes patience. It takes all kinds of things to make this happen, and I'm just really grateful that you're doing it, not only for your community, but inspiring women beyond your borders by doing this. So I really appreciate your time and including me in the conversation. Thank you.
It's a global movement today, so everyone's dancing all over the world.
It's part of a global revolution.
In more than 205 countries today, people are rising.
I want to tell you, you are making history. This has never happened before in the world, that 200 countries have come together.
This thing that we are part of today has never happened in the history of the world.
Hi, everyone. I am here in Bukavu, Democratic Republic of Congo, 1 Billion Rising. It will be the biggest global action on the history of humankind on the planet for women to end the violence and to bring about a time when women are cherished, safe, free, and equal. I just want you to imagine today that when you dance, when you put your body on the ground, when you put your feet on the mother, when you move your hips, when you move your body, when you move your soul, that we are literally dancing up the will of the world to end violence against women and girls. I could never have dreamed up the diversity of this movement. We have the Queen of the Carnival in Rio de Janeiro and the Queen Mother of Bhutan. We have prime ministers of Croatia and Australia. We have lamas. We have nuns. We have Zumba dancers. We have Karachi dance. We have an extraordinary dancer in Pakistan who will be dancing in Karachi where it is danger. We have women who have never danced before and women who will literally be risking their lives to dance. We have movie stars and we have domestic workers. We have migrant workers. We have union leaders. We have nurses. We have doctors. We have every type of person on the planet and every person on the planet. And I really believe this day will literally change the mindset, the paradigm, and the energy of the planet. And when we wake up on the 15th, we will not be finished with our efforts. We will begin the next stage of our efforts, where violence against women and girls will never be marginalized again, and we will have called up the intention and the energy to make sure we live in a world where women are safe and free. One of the greatest things about this movement is how connected we are across borders, across nations, across tribes, and we are in this together. We now know that violence against women is a global phenomena and isn't particular to culture or to nations or to families, but it's something all of us are impacted by. So when you dance, imagine you are dancing with everybody on this planet. Imagine you are connected to everyone on this planet, and dance your 1 billion rising dance so that we are safe and free and women are equal and we are cherished and come into our rightful power. And I want to take a minute to talk about dance. And I want to talk about the power of dance. As many of you know, 1 out of 3 women on the planet will be raped or beaten in her lifetime, which is so absurd. It's just even unfathomable. That's 1 billion women. 2 years ago, when we invited the women of the world and all the men who love them to rise and dance to end violence against women, it was extraordinary what happened. Survivors, activists, everywhere. It was an invitation. Immediately responded in 207 countries, and millions of people broke out and danced. They didn't ask a question about what dance was. But there were the skeptics, particularly in the media and the corporatized institutions, who kept saying, well, what's dancing?
What does dancing do? What's that going to do for anything? What's dancing? As if the ramblings and operations of their so-called empirically based empire had delivered us up another world other than this one on the brink of human extinction. I want to talk about the power of dancing, the power of what happens to a woman's body which has been traumatized by the state or domestic violence, bodies collectively releasing, expanding, joining, and resistance. Dancing, women and men, it got them to reclaim and re-energize public space, which had been absolutely something they were exiled from. It spun and it splashed creative and compassionate and determined energy in every direction. It made violence against women a front page issue. It allowed for autonomy and local organizing and global solidarity all at the same time. It evoked demands for justice across a swath of intersectional issues, understanding that violence towards women cannot be separated from all the other violences, whether they be economic, environmental, racial, or gender. We are in the same story. It added joy to the ingredients of our resistance, and by doing so, it added sexuality, and it evoked the mystical and intangible, producing what seemed like miracles. In Peru, for example, where there's a lot of development and a lot of sexual harassment on the street, the construction workers joined forces with 1 Billion Rising there, and they turned every construction site into a sexually harassment-free construction site. In India, due to the extraordinary feminists there, they did gender sensitivity training as part of 1 Billion Rising, and they educated over 100,000 rickshaw drivers who now, on their rickshaws, have a button that says, "My religion is respecting women." It forced the government of the Philippines to protect the girls in the paetas. The paetas are the dump sites in the Philippines where people are literally living in garbage. There is a mountain of garbage. And the women are granted, through a permit, if you can believe this, the right to scavenge. If they're lucky, they may get a piece of plastic that will bring them a dollar that they get to wash in a toxic river. But the girls, the young girls, couldn't afford to pay the permit. So they were selling their body, 8-year-old girls, in the morning to the truck drivers to get a right to scavenge. 1 Billion Rising changed that. And now the girls are protected. And there's a watchdog, and we hope next year we're going to move people into another way of making a living. The 1 Billion Rising and the dancing freed many women from prisons who had been held there for killing their perpetrators. It inspired men throughout the Congo to write a declaration of solidarity to end violence against women and girls across the world. And then they followed up with the national gathering that I got to attend, which was one of the most beautiful events I've ever seen. Men coming from across Congo to stand up for women and girls and to redefine masculinity. It's now collaborating, 1 Billion Rising, with restaurant workers in this country, fighting to end substandard pay, which directly licenses the highest level of sexual harassment in any industry. And I really believe we can win on this, and I urge all of you to stand with restaurant workers in this country. It led Haitian actors a few weeks ago to perform the vagina monologues in Creole in the Haitian parliament. And I have to tell you, it was one of the most revolutionary things I have ever seen. It bodily and boldly insisted on the implementation of laws to prevent sexual violence there. Dancing broke taboos and compelled women. The first action last year was women in Byron Bay, Australia, who stripped off their clothes and threw themselves into the sea. Women danced at factories, in front of corporations, in churches. But mainly it allowed women and men to come back into their bodies to reclaim public space so they, like Eve, could begin to remember the world we know inside us that we manifest outside us. It escalated ecstatic revolt. For years, a certain scene in Paradise Lost used to haunt me, in Milton's Paradise Lost. The archangel Michael is standing with Adam and Eve at the edge of garden right before their expulsion. He says to them, "Good out of evil will be a higher good than e'er before." For years, I took this to mean that we needed Eve to commit the sin of curiosity and disobedience. We needed her to bring an end to paradise because good without a knowledge of evil is a lesser good than good that overcomes evil. But I think Milton got it wrong. I think Eve already knew the higher good. I think she had the knowledge just like us in her body. She just needed to get out of that system, stop tiptoeing around that punishing and oppressive garden in order to get enough distance from the terror and trauma of the father, state, corporate machine, get around like-minded people, get enough confidence and support to remember the first story. And that's what we're doing here. This was one of the truly genius functions of Occupy Wall Street, to have a public, subversive place for group remembering and redesigning. We need many more of them. We need them everywhere. Gardens of reimagination, and Bioneers is such an amazing garden. We are stuck in the patriarchal, contaminated, capitalist, devastated garden, obeying the corporate daddy god, still living as if he has our interests at heart, as if the so-called paradise, without reflection or awareness in a somnolent state, seductive consumerist, near totalitarian surveillance, corporately owned media, celebrity void culture, internet voyeurism, and bullying is real or keeping us safe. Eve knew it was a mirage. She craved the real garden, the original garden, before the father god implanted his hierarchy and the violence and threat of punishment needed to sustain it. I just finished a wonderful biography of Emma Goldman by Vivian Gornick, and I suggest you all read it. For those of you who don't know her, you should be ashamed. At one time, she was known as the most dangerous woman in America, a title we should all aspire to. An anarchist, a revolutionary, she was most famous for her quote, "If I can't dance, I'm not coming to your revolution." In the biography, Gornick writes, "Felt is the operative word. Emma always claimed that the ideas of anarchism were of secondary use if grasped only with reasoning intelligence. It was necessary to feel them in every fiber like a flame, a consuming fever, an elemental passion. Goldman's radicalism, an impassioned faith, lived in the nervous system that feelings were everything. If revolutionaries gave up sex and art while they were making the revolution, she said, they would be devoid of joy. Without joy, human beings cease being human. So how do we build movements that are grown from loving life, fighting for life, love, pleasure, and joy? How do we make radical, outrageous, pushing the edge art and music that mainlines our thinking and passions into the masses? How do we keep evolving and surprising and deepening, getting closer and closer to the root? How do we shut up and serve? Be more concerned with expanding than branding, with following the multitudes than the messiahs. Be present for our allies without dominating them. Find resources for those without access to resources, without controlling how they use them. Stop using money as a weapon, but realize if you have some money to give away, you're lucky, not special. And no one needs to jump through hoops for it, because you don't have a hoop, you have money. Eve was a radical. And why I love that word radical, as it means going to the roots. This is the time for radical change. This is the time to come into our bodies and dance and drum and rise. This is the time to stop apologizing for our belief that it is possible to live in a world where everyone gets fed, taken care of, where we leave the rest of the oil in the ground, where those who do the hardest work are honored and paid the most, where we take our direction and inspiration from the most marginalized and invisible, where we trust our imaginations that once lined up in the direction of life will begin to create rapid and astounding solutions, where we transform human suffering not by more incarceration, punishment, and degradation, but investigation into root causes, where we stop celebrating and becoming passive participants to celebrity royalty, famous money, fame as our models, but instead honor and highlight those who humbly and without resources transform and lift their communities, where we trust the mystical, the emotional, and erotic as much as we trust the intellectual and political, and understand that their integration is not only the catalyst for revolution, but it may in fact be the revolution itself. Where we come to know, and I say this from the deepest sense, that humility is the path to revolution, and service is the only song. This year, it's 1 billion rising revolution. This is the time to come out of our silos, our movement ghettos, and understand that each struggle for justice, environmental, racial, indigenous, feminist, gender, we can go down the list, workers, economic, is a piece of a whole structure. And rather than being cauterized and divided, which they have done from the top, by our hunger for resources and spotlight, we give up dominion and fiercely and joyfully embrace the interconnectedness of every one of these things. There is no competition of suffering. Only the joining into a single river of outrage, compassion, and revolt. This is the time to remake the structure, to reclaim the original garden. And remember, the tree of life, the offering of apples or mushrooms, was there inside the patriarchal garden. It has always been within us. In the end, it's about people, respect, love, honoring, cherishing, valuing life and people, and our Mother Earth. We are Eve's children. Eve, revolutionary. Eve, who ate the apple that unearthed the first garden under the imposed and constructed garden. Eve, who ate the apple as her hunger for truth was our actual path, and now we must fulfill her legacy. Eve, Mother of our freedom, ate the apple to liberate us into the world, our world. This is our time. Eat the apple, not the GMO kind. Share it with your Adam, share it with Asali, with your beloved, and remember, revolution, rise!
Thank you, ladies, for a wonderful job. Women's rights, such an issue. I'll have comments to make about that myself. I'm Bobby Elias, the host of Let's Create a Better World. Evelina, our co-host, has done a wonderful job putting this together. Thank you so much, Evelina. For next week, we're going to have a little more about women's rights. Can you tell our listeners about that, please?
Yes, Bobby, thank you. Next week, I am very excited to announce that we will be listening to Drea Garcia and Felicia Parra, who are both amazing women entrepreneurs. They are food activists. They're women through the herbal movement and the natural healing. They have started a business in Eugene, Oregon, and I had the privilege and the honor to interview them while they quite hadn't opened up the entire business yet. They had opened up the herbal school and they were waiting for some permits to open up the cafe. And it's called Bohemia, the coffee, tea house, apothecary, and a healing space in Eugene. So I have some wonderful information, and there are two amazing women who have managed to come from the struggles of being single parent, being homeless, to the point where they are now opening up their own business. And I know our listeners are just going to be amazed at their story.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to next week. Women's rights is one of our strong subjects. Animal rights also, food, diet, the correct foods to eat. We get into the whole thing of how to live better, how to live longer. Our second theme, of course, is healthy aging. We also talk about GMOs, about EMFs, electric magnet fields, the radiation from all the electrical appliances. And we talk about a lot of things. So I wanted to also make some comments here quickly, and that is that there are so many things going on against women in the armed services and the colleges. We're talking about rape, abuse of all kinds, and the men get away with it, especially in the services, because of the old boys network. That's not right. That's not fair. Also, in the Caribbean, every year there are about 100,000 women that are brought in from mostly the Caribbean, but other parts of the world, brought in as sexual slaves. They're kind of owned, almost like a slave master who owns them, and they have to do all these favors. Some of them don't comply. Their families will be hurt or killed. There's so many things of that sort going on, and the corporations, politically, jobs, where women are discriminated against so much. It's got to change, and I would love to see a women's movement pick up again. I go back to the 70s when I went to some of the women's rights marches. I took my little children. So it's a great, great movement, and I love talking about this subject. So, Evelina, first of all, I want to thank a few people, and then you can say goodbye. I'll finish the show. I want to thank our producer in New York, Jason. I want to thank the other staff, Casey, the engineer, and others that work on the Progressive Radio Network which, by the way, this past week, 28,000 people tuned in to Progressive Radio Network. So I'm happy about that. I want to thank our LA staff, our producer, Jimmy D, our associate producer, who always does a lot of work, Stuart Hassel. I want to thank you, the listeners. So I want to say goodbye to everyone. And Evelina?
Well, I also want to thank all the Progressive Radio Network team members for their dedication. I want to wish them much love, not just today on Valentine's Day, but every day of the year. May we all have much love in our lives, not just have to have a holiday to express it.
That's right.
It should be all the time. And also I do want to thank Lindsay Horvath for the time that she's given us on this amazing interview and her unconditional commitment to moving forward on both a political level and an activist level for the rights of all women. And of course, Eve Ensler, I mean, what can we say about her? She's just, I can't even find the words to describe what an amazing woman she is and the work that she's done and how grateful we are here in locally, nationally, and globally with the 1 billion rising calling for an end to all violence against women and girls in the world. And for somebody to take it on and to actually make a dent in the consciousness is inspiring. And thank you to you, Bobby, for this opportunity to be a part of your team. It's a great honor, and happy Valentine's Day.
So happy Valentine's Day, everybody. Thank you for tuning in, and be sure to tune in next week. Evelina's got more of the show, and we've got more on women's rights and other major issues. Thank you.
Well, it is Valentine's Day, like no other.
To mark Valentine's Day, the 1 billion rising.
1 billion rising campaign.
Dünya çapında 1 milyar kadın, kadına şiddete.
1 billion women.
Every 2 minutes, somewhere in the United States, someone is sexually assaulted.
A campaign is about
1 billion rising is a movement which calls for an end to violence and gender inequality.
The global campaign dubbed 8 billion rising.
Somali women in Mogadishu have joined the world in.
In fact, in every village you will see scenes like these.
Then at least 1 billion rising Jarutani.
Birazdan burada kentteki ikinci eylem dansını.
1 billion rising campaign all in moving across the world.
Everybody should be here. This is a call for 1 billion rising.
Filipinos in London and around the world are part of a campaign against violence towards
the
women.
Jago ne jago!